New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
It's almost that time. The NBA draft is right around the corner. Morgan, I didn't expect to be excited about this draft because I didn't think the Kings were going to be in the lottery.
Yeah.
But they are in the lottery. They are. 13th pick. And what we love to tell people is we're not draft experts.
No.
So we try to reach out to people who know what the hell they're talking about. And one of the best draft sites out there, No Ceilings. NoCeilingsNBA.com. They also have a YouTube page you should check out. And this guy we're bringing on, Nick Agar Johnson, he did a deep dive into the Kings, one, and then I found out this guy lives in Sacramento.
Yes. And I'm loving this story. But he lives in Sacramento, but he's not born and raised in Sacramento. And he's a Kings fan. We need to know more.
Yes. So, Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Great to be here. First time, long time. Is that something I should say? Or is that
sure.
Too obvious?
Amazing.
So let's rewind for a second because I want to explore how you got into the draft and why do you love it so much. But you moved to Sacramento 3 years ago. Why did you move to Sacramento?
Honestly, a lot of it was rooted in Kings fandom. A lot of it was rooted in having grown up in New York City and decided at a very young age that I did not want to live in New York City as an adult and wanted to be in California where, you know, I could choose to go to where there was snow rather than having to be forced to deal with it 4 months out of the year. So I moved to the Bay Area just after college and then moved up here to Sac 3 years ago.
Okay, now what got you to be a Kings fan in New York City?
So I got into basketball fandom slightly later in life. And by slightly later in life, I mean junior year in high school.
Okay.
So, you know, not too late.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was at least old enough to, you know, have some sort of semblance of knowledge and was surrounded by a lot of long-suffering Knicks fans and thought to myself, maybe I shouldn't root for the team owned by James Dolan. And my dad's entire side of the family is from Cincinnati, Ohio, and the former Cincinnati Royals became the Sacramento Kings. So I used that as my excuse only to find out that the Sacramento Kings were owned by the Maloof brothers. So great decision making on my part.
So you went from one dysfunctional franchise to rooting for the one on the West Coast.
Nice.
Interesting play there. But
you know,
something
I was
special about
deciding
it.
Between the two teams that were going to be 30th in any ownership ranking that you might put out there.
That is hilarious. Well, I'm glad. Do you like living in Sacramento? Are you vibing with it?
Oh, I love it here. I'm someone who doesn't mind the heat at all, but despises the cold. So when everybody else is suffering in 100-degree heat, I'm like, this is awesome. I don't have to deal with winter. I don't have to deal with snow unless I want to. It's beautiful.
That's the best part. You get to choose. Like, hey, do I want to drive 90 minutes to Tahoe? Or do I even want a little cool day in San Francisco? You said first you moved to the Bay Area and then you moved to Sacramento. What made you not connect with maybe Bay Area basketball or anything like that?
It wasn't as much that I didn't connect with Bay Area basketball. It was more just that the first job I worked at of college was in Berkeley. So that's, you know, sort of where I was at. But when I moved on from that job, you know, I had a bit more freedom in deciding where I wanted to be. And, you know, being close to Golden One was a decently high on the priority list. And one of my best friends in college was also from Sacramento. And every time I stayed at his house, I loved it out here. So here I am.
I love it.
So cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I had no idea about your, when I read your piece, I think it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. No idea the Sacramento connection. I saw your bio. I'm like, this guy's from Sacramento. Let's talk to him.
And like everything he's talking about with the draft in Sacramento, I was like, wow, he's really locked in. But you seem like a little bit of a basketball nerd when it comes to that stuff. And
just a little bit.
And I love that. I love that you've been able to do all the work so we don't have to.
So what led you into covering the NBA draft and evaluating all these prospects?
So honestly, the main reason that I got so into the NBA draft, I mean, it started with, you know, following the Kings during some of the, let's say, non-playoff contending years, to be generous. And so, you know, that was a lot of the fun of it. But for me, really, the main reason that I love draft coverage is because I love the hope of it. I love the idea of, you know, okay, who might go where, you know, who might they turn into when they reach the NBA level, whether it be because of the team they end up on or the situation they end up in. There's so much that's up in the air, but, you know, I try to do my best to be objective and honest about things. You know, sometimes just hoping that a player is going to develop a shot when they're a complete non-shooter is not exactly the smartest path to go down, but that's really what drove it for me. You know, the hopes and dreams of all these young people about to, you know, fulfill their lifelong dreams for the vast majority of the players entering the NBA. It's a really cool thing, and it's a great space to be a part of. And, you know, it's great to write about and think about the Kings, but I do love the draft for that hope aspect of it.
I love that you enjoy the human element of it too. That's really cool, because I think sometimes people just try to separate that when they evaluate.
I want wingspan.
Yeah, yes.
How they shoot.
I want to know how fast they are.
How big are their hands?
They're looking a little skinny. Can they even lift a pound? You know, all those things. Yeah, yeah. And so I guess what would be one of your favorite things then about evaluating prospects?
I think it's really that combination of hope and sort of the jigsaw puzzle of how it all fits out. You know, even the greatest draft experts in the world get it wrong so often. And that's because there are so many variables that go into all of this. You know, what if someone in theory was a perfect fit for a team and then they suffer a shoulder injury and they lose their shooting touch, and all of a sudden it's, you know, a whole long rigmarole to get back to having a successful NBA career. And I'm very happy that that ended up happening for Markelle Fultz. But, you know, for a lot of it, there's this element that you're trying to figure out the situation of, okay, you know, which player works best for which team. That's something that goes both ways, right? It's a situation where, you know, maybe a certain player would have blossomed if only they'd gotten the playing time in their first stop, and they become someone who ends up being, you know, a quote unquote second draft guy, where all of a sudden they make their way to a new team and they figure things out. And, you know, maybe it's just developing a corner shot. Maybe it's just developing a couple more counters in the post so the defenses have more trouble dealing with you. But it's something where, again, there's so much up in the air. It's, you know, it's a jigsaw puzzle, but there's also the element of hope of, wow, you know, if this guy just figures out a little bit better, you know, shot selection, then he'll be someone who's, you know, the steal of the draft, or, you know, someone who everybody says in hindsight was drafted 10 picks too late, right? There's so much that goes into it, and, you know, really just all of it fascinates me. So yes, I suppose that's the nerdiest answer I could possibly give.
There you go. No, that's great. I mean, we're all nerds. We love basketball. It's great. It's a sport.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
I have a question for you that's kind of random about this. What in your time doing this, what's like the biggest hit, the one you're like, oh, I was proud of my evaluation in that on that person, and then your biggest whiff, like the one that you're like, I can't, like, that's kind of embarrassing, I missed on that one?
My biggest whiff is easy, and it's very relevant. I was worried that Jason Tatum would be someone who would be an inefficient mid-range shooter, who the defense would be decent but not good enough. Okay. I had him somewhere in the 7 to 10 range. I don't remember exactly where off the top of my head, but I was not sure that he would be able to make good enough shot choices, and that was proven wrong immediately. So that's an easy one for my biggest miss.
What about your hit?
It's a bit early, but I was in on Jaime Jaquez from his sophomore year, and that one's looking pretty good so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Also thought Tyrese Haliburton should have gone fourth in his draft, and that one also looks pretty good so far.
Yeah. Wow.
Those are two that I think I'd put near the top of my list of hits.
That's good.
Yeah. Especially when you think of, like, Jaime Jaquez in his motor alone, you're most likely going to hit on that, right? With someone with that type of energy, with someone that has that type of mindset that they want to get better, that you can just tell that they're going to get better. And then also being drafted by the Miami Heat. Oh, so being put into a system where like you have no other choice but to get better.
And that, you know, goes back to the jigsaw puzzle element of it. You know, maybe if Jaime Jaquez had been drafted by the Detroit Pistons, we wouldn't be talking about Jaime Jaquez the way we are after his rookie year.
Always.
Well, let's dive into this draft, the 2024 NBA draft. And it's funny because there are certain drafts that people look at and, oh, this one's going to suck. And then it turns out, hey, it's actually not so bad. It seems like that near the top, people aren't in love. Like, you're not going, oh my God, there's a Victor Wembanyama, a Chad, a Banchero, like something like that. But overall, it seems like this draft has some pretty talented players. Where are you at as with this draft as a whole? How much talent do you think is in this draft?
I think there's quite a bit of talent in this draft. And more importantly, for the main reason why I'm here, I think there's going to be a lot of talent that's available in terms of long-term role players and, you know, long-term sort of lower down the hierarchy starting options, right? You know, maybe there's not a clear number one at the top like Victor Wembanyama. Maybe there's not a clear 2-3 like there was with Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson last year. But first of all, even with the worst drafts, and my colleague Tyler Rucker wrote about this recently over at No Ceilings, even in the worst drafts, there are at least 3 All-Stars out of every class. And, you know, sometimes those All-Stars end up being, you know, the 1, 2, and 5 picks. But, you know, in 2013, which is widely regarded as, you know, one of the terrible, terrible drafts, Giannis Antetokounmpo went 15th. So, you know, even in the worst draft, there is some all-star talent. But I think more to the point with this draft, there are a number of players who I am quite confident in saying will have, you know, 10-year plus NBA careers. And, you know, especially for a team like Sacramento that isn't, you know, necessarily in need of a star as much as, say, the Washington Wizards or the Detroit Pistons, right? You know, there will be quite a few players on the board at 13 that I am comfortable saying will have long-term NBA careers. And quite frankly, if the Kings get a 5th starter out of this draft at 13, that's a huge win.
Huge. I absolutely agree. And I mean, that goes for so many other teams as well. I also think when I look at a draft like this too, it's always hard for me to connect, you know, especially when all the other drafts, when you have like the for sure number 1 through 5, it's just, there's something magical about it. There's something easy. There's so many narratives out there. There's so many stories. There's so many things to connect to. With this, what makes a draft like this maybe a little bit more difficult to, I don't know if it's connect for you or just like research some of these guys.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's, again, part of the fun for me is the jigsaw element of it, which is, you know, a lot more up in the air when a draft is less obvious like this one, right? You know, I certainly have a relatively clear number one in this draft class. But, you know, even beyond that, there's, you know, quite a bit of conversation that the Wizards will be having at 2. You know, there's quite a bit of conversation already around, you know, whether the Houston Rockets are going to be looking to trade the 3rd pick and, you know, what sort of road that leads down. So, you know, yeah, maybe in terms of sort of the headliner, this is going to be a generational force. This is going to be someone who you tell your grandkids about. You know, maybe there's not someone like that in this draft, but I think there are going to be a lot of teams that, you know, when we look at this by year 3, year 4 after this draft, are going to be very happy with the player they picked. And, you know, you get those kinds of stories as well, right? You know, Keegan Murray is someone who, you know, maybe isn't the most effusive person, but, you know, the longer he stays on the team, the more interviews he does, the more you learn about him, the more people get attached to him. And certainly with Keegan, I mean, the Keegan Murray chants were going down by like game 1, game 2, right? So, you know, he's someone the Kings fan base in particular connected with very quickly. But, you know, I think that, yes, there's a little bit of an element that there's less focus on the draft because there isn't someone like Victor Wembanyama who, you know, might change the course of the NBA, right? But there are going to be a lot of stories that come out of this draft that are going to be important parts of team stories for the next decade.
So as it stands right now, the Kings are picking 13th and then in the second round at 45. Let's start with 13 for a second. Obviously, there's a wide range of names that the Kings could target. Is there one name in particular right now that excites you most? If you hear their name at 13, you're like, this is perfect for Sacramento.
Yes. So that guy for me is someone who I personally have been a fan of for a long time. And that is Daron Holmes II out of Dayton. And he's someone who I think if you were to poll Kings fans, there might be a different order of the top three needs, but I think the top three needs would be forwards with size and length, rim protection, and rim pressure. And Daron Holmes is someone who I think a lot of people sort of miss the forest for the trees with him, in the sense that the past couple of seasons, he's been the main man offensively for Dayton. He's had the ball in his hands constantly. I mean, this past season, you know, 20 points a game, had the ball running through his hands pretty much every possession. But his freshman year at Dayton, he was one of, if not the best complementary type of big men that I evaluated. You know, he was in the 97th percentile offensively in synergy numbers, 98th percentile as a transition player, 83rd percentile as a cutter. And if you look at him from that aspect as someone who you can plug in pretty much right away as a starting four, you know, he's a experienced college player, which is certainly an archetype that Monty McNair has shown he's enamored with in the past, right? You know, he's someone who I believe could be plugged in right away as a four. He really expanded the most important element of his game that was still lacking this past season by developing a jump shot, and more importantly, developing a standstill shot from three. He was in the 92nd percentile as a spot-up shooter. He shot 39% from deep. And when you plug someone like that into the Kings offense, you know, I didn't even mention the fact that he's averaged two blocks a game or more in multiple college seasons. You add someone like that in the starting lineup, he makes a ton of sense from that perspective. You have him come off the bench as a potential small ball five, and he fills another, you know, less urgent need for the Kings, I think, but a fascinating wrinkle is he's also an exceptional passer, and he's someone who, he's not going to run the offense to the same degree that Domantas Sabonis does, but if you can have someone who you plug in as your small ball five who can run 70% of the actions that you run through Domantas Sabonis, rather than having a completely different look in an Alex Leonard, JaVale McGee, then the rest of the Kings offensive context just makes a lot more sense, because you're running the same playbook that you're running with the starters, just with someone who, again, you know, pretty much no one in the NBA is on Domantas Sabonis' level as a passer. But if you can fill that niche off the bench and also add shot blocking to the starting lineup, and also add someone who has shown that they can be an exceptional complementary big man who also will take full advantage if teams switch small on him, I think that package as a whole would be absolutely perfect for the Kings.
You talk about his passing, his cutting, him as a role man. What is it about his game? Instinct, feel, like what makes him so good at those things?
I think he has an incredibly high feel for the game. I think it's something that you can see on both ends of the floor. But for me, the offensive stuff is what excites me more. And, you know, I think with him, he's someone who, again, if the ball's in his hands, you're perfectly happy and you assume that he will make the right play more often than not. And that's something where, you know, again, if he's a four, he can, you know, space the floor and he can space the floor. He can run out in transition. He's exceptional out in transition. You know, he's someone who I think has an incredibly high feel for the game, has shown that he can fit in as a complementary player in previous seasons, but also has shown the past couple of seasons his, you know, incredible offensive mind for the game. But also his development. I mean, his freshman year, he shot 7 3-pointers and he hit one of them. And, you know, over the past three seasons at Dayton, it's been, you know, very clear on film. You know, again, there's only so much that you can know about a person's work ethic from the outside, right? But if you look at the numbers on film, you can see, and okay, this is someone who saw this as, you know, essentially the biggest hole in their game and worked on it and slowly developed it. And, you know, that's the kind of player who, again, you know, maybe he doesn't shoot 39% from deep right away in the NBA, but there's reason to believe that he is someone who will continue to work on his shot and continue to grow his game in the areas which he needs to grow his game for the team that he ends up on.
You know, I watched one of his games recently, and the one thing that I was curious about is just what position he plays at the next level. And you mentioned small ball five, the four spot. I think sometimes when I look at him, I go, okay, but who is he defending, right? And like, where do you see him at defensively at this point if he's got to defend some of the more athletic fours in the NBA?
I think he's somewhat of an underrated athlete. I mean, he's someone who, you know, dunks are an imperfect metric of athleticism, but he's been near the top of the NCAA in dunks for a while. He's someone who, you know, again, two out of three seasons at Dayton had two or more blocks per game. I think probably his best position defensively, theoretically, is at the five,
right?
But I'm willing to bet, you know, on what he would provide for the Kings as a four man, you know, if that's sort of a limited role, you know, again, whether he's someone who comes in and starts right away, or whether, you know, I think the more likely outcome is that he starts his career coming off the bench behind Harrison Barnes and, you know, could potentially grow into being a four. But, you know, even though I think the five is probably his best position defensively, I'm not anywhere near as worried about him being a switch guy, being in motion, as I am about, you know, some other guys who are sort of in that quote unquote tweener 4-5 range.
I'm going to ask you about a guy that, and again, you do way more homework than me on the draft. Okay. I can be swayed easily here, but I'm really intrigued with Khalil Ware. Mm-hmm. I just got, and maybe it's because, you know, I've been watching Derek Lively and got, okay, you got some rim protection. Khalil Ware didn't take a high volume from three this year, but he knocked him down. Also, he played on a team that doesn't take threes. Mike Woodson's team looks like they play old school basketball. But I'm like, I like Khalil Ware. Where are you at with Khalil Ware as a player at the next level?
I would say in the middle on him, which is probably not the answer that you were hoping for.
I want your answer. I don't care. I watched a couple games. I'm like, dude, I love the energy he plays with. He's athletic. I feel like defensively too, like he can block shots, but he's not just hunting the blocks. Like he's very patient. Good rim protector. He's a vertical threat at the rim, which I think the Kings have lacked. And showing the ability to space the floor a little bit, I'm like, there's something here. Now, I understand the concern is like, well, you have Sabonis. Do you really need to drop a potential backup five? But I want to get your breakdown on his game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot to like with Khalil Ware's game. I think, you know, again, there might be situations where, you know, he would make more sense where he wouldn't necessarily be sort of a limited minute backup, but I buy the shot, certainly, and I definitely buy the effort. I mean, it's funny to me that there were a lot of effort concerns his freshman year at Oregon, and he comes to Indiana and erases that almost immediately, you know, averaged almost a double-double, you know, with someone who, even on an Indiana team that, let's just be kind and say that they struggled throughout the college season this past year, he was the one guy who reliably was providing effort every night, who was, you know, working his butt off on the glass, who was, you know, spacing the floor. I am slightly concerned about the shot in just in the sense that I think that this is mean, but I've called this the Derek Williams fallacy before, where someone takes an incredibly small volume of threes and hits them at a high rate, and people assume, oh, okay, they're going to be a shooter. I mean, there are other indicators, like he shot 63% from the free throw line, right? That's, you know, a bit concerning. And that's also a dip from his previous season at Oregon on, you know, a higher volume from the free throw line, which, you know, again, sample size is what it is. But, you know, certainly the fact that his percentage was not going up in that regard is, you know, something that I weigh against the fact that he shot 42.5% from three this year on 1.3 attempts per game. Last year, he shot 27% from three on 1.6 attempts per game.
Are you unsold now?
No. I mean, I saw the same stats and I understand it for sure. I do think Indiana's offense was just brutal to watch. I think someone had mentioned to me in our Discord that they made something like five threes per game. Like it's just like an archaic offense, like an old school. They played two bigs together. It's very clunky at times. And so in my head, I'm like, well, maybe with some NBA spacing, he's able to get some cleaner looks. He's encouraged to shoot it more. But it is always strange when you have someone that, you know, the volume isn't completely there from three. And then you look at the free throw percentage, and you're like, man, that's not very good at all.
Yeah, there are 362 Division I college basketball teams, and the Indiana Hoosiers were 355th in three-point attempts.
See, that's what I'm saying. They don't take threes. Mike Woodson, old school.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Are you done with him?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because this is the thing now I need you to sell me on. And I think, okay. I think I've gotten to the point where I can now be sold because of the situation with Malik Monk, the question marks surrounding him. Are they going to be shipping off other guards? Whenever I hear that the Kings are going to draft a guard, I go, I get triggered, a little traumatized, like another one, really? Like, cause it, where's the size? Like, where's the length? You know, I need to stop. So help me stop. Tell me some guards that maybe I could get excited about, especially in that range.
So I think the first couple names that I want to bring up are guys who have often been projected much higher, but if they fall to the Kings, I think they would almost have to pounce on. And the first name I want to mention is Nikola Topić, who was one of the top guards in the class, you know, was consistently in the top 10 pretty much all season. And then he suffered an injury and missed 2 months. And then recently it was announced he had a partial ACL tear. So he's someone who I think is falling right now just purely for reasons of, you know, being injured. And there's a question of can he recover or not. But his greatest skill is, I think, you know, the biggest skill that the Kings are missing for their guards, whether or not Malik Monk sticks around, which is just putting pressure on the basket. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, you know, took a step back, not, you know, in terms of his play, but in terms of his frequency of attacking the basket. And when he or Malik were not attacking the basket, the Kings really didn't have anybody who could drive the ball all the way from the three-point line to the rim, right? I mean, Domantas Sabonis obviously puts a ton of pressure on the rim, but, you know, he's putting that pressure on the rim mostly from 10 feet in, right? He's not someone who, unless you throw the slowest center in the league on him, he's not going to, you know, dribble drive past anybody. So with that in mind, Topić is arguably the best guard in this class at finishing around the basket. And, you know, he's someone who gets there at a high rate. He's someone who is also one of the better, if not the best, passers in the class. And if he falls due to injury, you know, I'm willing to bet that Monty McNair is willing to take the chance that he recovers because, you know, again, not to, you know, go too far here, but, you know, Tyrese Halliburton was someone who was projected to go, you know, top five, top 10 in his draft. And he fell to 12, and Monty pounced. And, you know, we all know how that turned out. Right.
Yeah.
So I think with someone like Topić, when you add the incredible rim pressure that he provides, when you add the playmaking element that he provides as well, you know, the two biggest questions with him are the shot, which I'm concerned about. I'm not going to pretend I'm not. And the defense, which I'm far less concerned about because, A, the Kings showed, you know, during the stretch of last season that they were a much better defensive team with Keon Ellis in the starting lineup playing major minutes. And also he's 6'6". You know, he's not someone who is necessarily going to be targeted, you know, due to his size. He might be targeted because he's not the best defender, but, you know, he's someone who I'm more willing to bet on figuring enough out defensively that the pressure he puts on the rim would play at a high level. The playmaking element that he adds would play at a high level. I think if he falls, he's someone that the Kings should heavily consider at 13.
Interesting. A couple other guards, Isaiah Collier. I watched a couple of his games.
I was intrigued.
My biggest concern with him, you know, the shooting. I don't know. I get worried when guards can't shoot. And the thing that's intriguing about him, though, I mean, this is someone who at one point was projected near the top of the draft. Mm-hmm. McDonald's All-American. I watch him, and he's like, what, 18, 19 years old? 19 years old. And he looks like he can play now to me. Like, he's got an NBA body. He kind of plays at his own pace. There's a lot I like there. His ability to put some pressure on the rim, something you just mentioned too. Where are you at with him?
That's the biggest element for why I'm in on Collier to the degree that I'm in on him. To be clear, I have a few guards ahead of him on my personal board, but I think a couple of them in particular would make less sense for the Kings than Collier would. And it's purely for that rim pressure element. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, he's 6'5", 210, right? He's, you know, I think he actually measured slightly smaller than that at the combine height wise, but, you know, he's someone who has an NBA ready frame, which, you know, maybe he's on the younger side at 19, but, you know, he's someone who I'm willing to bet will be able to attack the basket at a high level immediately at the NBA level, rather than, you know, having to sort of put on weight, right? He's already at the point where he's built essentially like a linebacker. The shot concerns me. I won't pretend that it doesn't, but I think there's also an element to which many of the areas that he struggled with were magnified by the fact that the USC team was a bit of a disaster this year. And, you know, there's only so much of that that you can put on the freshman guard who missed time with injury. And I would argue actually was better after he came back from that injury than he was before. But, you know, the other element with Collier that's concerning is the turnovers. You know, he was someone who turned the ball over more than 3 times a game. And I think, you know, first of all, he was much better at that down the stretch of the season than he was at the early part of the season, which is certainly encouraging. But with him, I think, you know, especially since he's not, you know, in the 6'6", 6'7" range, he would really need to shoot at a higher level than he has. But he does, in my opinion, fill the biggest need that the Kings have in a guard going forward, which is whether or not Malik Monk sticks around, I think they need more rim pressure across the roster. And that's certainly something that Collier will provide at a high level.
Another guy I told Morgan about that I like, just from a pure dog perspective. And I got to be honest, that sways me a little bit, probably too much.
I know.
But Devin Carter, man, he's just fun. I don't know what he really is at the next level. Is he more of a rotational guy? Probably 6'3", but a close to 6'9 wingspan.
Uh-huh.
Not scared of anybody.
Morgan seems super bought in here.
It's the thing that he does.
Okay.
He is so sold by the motor of someone, the energy, the person. And but that is something that I think some people overlook. What do you think? And also, do you put a lot of stock into like that same kind of thing? The motor, the energy, the mentality?
I don't think I put quite as much stock in it as Deuce does, but I think it's important. I want to try and be balanced here because I'm slightly lower on Devin Carter than consensus. And I'm also slightly lower on the fit with him on the Kings, which is, I think a lot of the positives that he brings to the table are already answered by Davion Mitchell and Keon Ellis. And so when you know, add that element, the question is, okay, who is he playing over, right? You know, is he someone who he could, you know, pretty easily take Chris Duarte's minutes, I think, right? But, you know, when you're picking at 13, I'm not as sure that I would want to pick someone who overlaps so heavily with, you know, the recently promoted starting shooting guard and the first point guard off the bench, right? It's something where I think there are a lot of teams where Devin Carter could be incredibly valuable. And, you know, I want to couch this in the fact that I'm more than willing to believe that I might be wrong on being lower on Carter than consensus. But I think ultimately he doesn't do enough to answer the questions that the Kings have and overlaps a bit too much with players they already have for me to be particularly high on him as a potential fit for the Kings at 13.
Yeah, I don't totally trust his shot either. I know that's one thing I don't totally trust.
How many people have you said that about?
Well, that's, I mean, you're talking about young guys.
Yeah, I was just about to say youth, younger.
No, but I think seeing Carter's ability to rebound and defend, like his screen navigation, he gets up in the guys. I also like the fact that I know he's 6'3", but he's long. You know, like that wingspan does matter.
Yeah.
Like you have to have some length, and the Kings desperately lack. They could use a lot of that. And also, I hear you on like the guard thing. For sure. And that's what I think about, too, when I'm looking at 13. But in my head, I'm like, the Kings are going to look different next year. Like, is Dave Young going to be back next year? I don't know. Maybe. So who the hell knows at that point? But I hear you on Devin. He's kind of fun to watch, man. You know, like he'd get the crowd into it. And maybe that's not the right call at 13. Let's see here. Is there a guard we've missed that we should talk about at 13?
I think someone else who, again, is mocked much higher but might potentially fall to the Kings at 13 would be Rob Dillingham out of Kentucky. And look, the headline thing with him is he's absolutely electric offensively. I mean, he's someone who, if Malik Monk leaves, you can plug Rob in essentially right away as sixth man extraordinaire. I think the biggest thing from me that he showed this past season at Kentucky was his willingness and ability to be a high level playmaker. You know, he was someone who, coming out of OTE, there were concerns about, you know, is this guy in love with his own shot too much? Is he someone who, you know, won't necessarily be able to fit into a team context? And I think he disproved that very powerfully this past season at Kentucky. And, you know, again, whether or not Malik sticks around, I think, you know, a guard who can provide offense, who can penetrate the lane, who can kick out to shooters is something that the Kings could use. And, you know, if Rob falls to the Kings at 13, I think he's someone who they definitely should consider. You know, he fills a lot of what I think the Kings would need out of a guard if they want to go the route of taking a guard.
Go.
Can we move on to the 45th? Or
No. Oh. I have some more names. Oh, I'm going to throw him. Okay, because we haven't talked. One name that's very popular to tie the Kings is Tristan Da Silva from Colorado. He's been mocked to the Kings a lot. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. He seems like he could just fit in. It seems kind of like a Monty McNair pick too, right? He's got good size, good passer, can shoot it. Where are you at with Tristan Da Silva?
So Daron Holmes is my personal favorite for the Kings to select at 13. But as I said before, I'm willing to acknowledge that he's my guy in this draft. So I'm very much in favor of him. Tristan Da Silva is the second guy on my sort of Kings specific big board. And I think the reason for that is, you know, very similar to the argument for Keegan Murray when he was taken, which is, okay, you know, you need someone who can come in and be a potential fifth starter, you know, someone with size at forward. He's 6'8", someone who, you know, as you mentioned, very perfectly fits into the Monty McNair archetype of, you know, veteran player who can come in and play right away. You know, he shot 40% from 3-point range this year, you know, 2.5 assists per game, played well off Colorado's two other star level players in KJ Simpson and Cody Williams, who both will almost certainly go in the first round on draft night as well. Da Silva is, you know, I think mocked to the Kings often because, you know, maybe it's a bit boring, but it's very easy for me to see the fit, right? You plug him in right away, whether he comes in off the bench behind Harrison Barnes or sort of takes over that starting spot. He's someone who you pair with Keegan, you have a couple of 6'8 forwards who can shoot, who can dribble, who can pass, who can make good decisions with the ball in their hands. You know, he doesn't necessarily provide that much rebounding, which I think would be the one sort of biggest argument against his fit potentially with the Kings. But, you know, if you're looking for size on sort of on the wing slash forward area, he's someone who I think checks almost any box that the Kings might want to have checked.
You got someone rebounding in there anyway.
Yeah, but they need some, yeah. They need some dogs. Go get after it.
They need some dogs, Deuce says.
God, that's what I was going to ask you. You just mentioned something at the start of this. You just a second ago, you said do you have a Kings related big board? Like a Kings specific one?
I mean, mainly it's just, you know, I don't remember if you mentioned this on air or off air, but I recently wrote a preview for No Ceilings of the Kings picks at 13. And so for those purposes, I sort of tried to prepare a few Kings specific options of who's likely to be on the board at 13, who might fall to the Kings and that they should consider at 13, even if, you know, theoretically, if I'm looking at it and, you know, the average mock draft has Rob Dillingham and Nikola Topic going in the top 10, you know, maybe the odds are not great that they'll be available at 13, but if they are, it'd be awesome if the Kings went and got him, right? So, you know, I don't have like, you know, 100 names that I have slotted as here are the 100 best options for the Kings at 13, but yeah, there are a few players who I think, you know, whether it be because they're sort of mocked in that range or because I think they fill a specific need for the Kings, you know, I have a bit medium board, let's say, of Kings options at 13.
By the way, I was not expecting you to have 100. That would be insane. If he had 100, like, you work for an NBA front office. Okay, so you have Holmes, Da Silva. Give me your top five.
I would say Holmes, Da Silva, Rob Dillingham, Nikola Topic, and then the fifth is a bit harder. Yeah. I would say probably Kyle Filipowski slightly over Khalil Ware with Isaiah Collier right behind.
Interesting.
And I think with Filipowski, it's, you know, similar argument to Holmes. He's slightly better as ball handler. He's, you know, he has a bit more shooting history, but I don't necessarily buy into that. That being said, he did take a huge step forward as a shooter and as a shot blocker this past season at Duke. So I would probably say Filipowski would be fifth beyond the four names that I already mentioned.
Let's get to 45 more, because you were talking about, and I know this is really hard to project, okay?
For sure.
But so, because that's such a wide range, a second round's a total crapshoot.
Love a good sleeper, though.
Do you have any, like, sleepers, like, guys that maybe could be there potentially, that you're like, that's kind of an intriguing name to watch?
Yeah, I do have a few, actually.
Of course.
I think that, you know, first of all, the willingness to, you know, go after some of these options might be changed by who the Kings pick at 13, right? You know, if the Kings take Daron Holmes at 13, maybe I look more forward slash guard for 45. But one of the options who I think has been rising in recent weeks in combines and individual workouts and the like, to the point where he might not be available at 45, is Jonathan Mobo out of San Francisco. You know, he's someone who played a lot of center in San Francisco, will not play center at the NBA. He's 6'6", not in shoes, you know, 6'8", give or take, you know, with shoes. But he's someone who is an exceptional passer from, you know, sort of the four slot, maybe could move up to the three in theory, but the shot is really the biggest weakness for him. So, you know, he's probably more of sort of a big man type, but, you know, he's someone who I'm willing to bet will stick on an NBA roster. And, you know, if you can get someone like that at 45, I think that's a huge win. You know, he's someone who, especially if the Kings, you know, go sort of the forward route, you know, Da Silva, someone else at 13, he's someone who I think would make a lot of sense at 45 as, you know, pretty much a four, but someone who is a really high level passer, who's also a great rebounder, who, you know, again, Sabonis covers a lot of the rebounding, but I don't think all of the rebounding concerns, you know, certainly given that the Kings ended last season, you know, above middle of the pack rebounding wise, but a lot of that was due to Sabonis. Right. And, you know, certainly that's something that out of the power forward spot is not necessarily strength for the Kings. So he's someone who'd be high on my list. Someone else who I think makes sense more for sort of a lower down the list concern is Osa Iguodaro, who fills, I think, a lot of the passing areas that I mentioned earlier with Daron Holmes, as someone who is one of, if not maybe even the best big man passer in this class. I'm not as sold on his offense outside of the passing, but I think he's also someone who's, you know, a pretty capable defender, whether that be, you know, he's more of a help defender than sort of a rim protecting big man type, which, you know, again, if he's someone who you want to play alongside Sabonis, maybe you'd want to have a little bit more rim protection. But certainly if you're talking about that sort of 70% range that I mentioned earlier with Daron Holmes, being able to run the offense through Osa Iguodaro, that's something that I'm pretty confident he could do at a high level. And then someone sort of more on the forward side who's been a hot name as of late is Isaiah Crawford out of Louisiana Tech. He's someone who has multiple seasons on record as being, you know, a high level 3-point shooter. He's, you know, a bit undersized at 6'6 for sort of the forward slot, but he's someone, again, who just fills a lot of gaps. You know, he's a great passer. He's a really solid defender. He's someone who can switch at a high level. And I think when you're talking about 45, ultimately, there are two sort of major concerns that I think about when you're talking about mid second round, which is, first of all, just, is there an avenue for this guy to even make the team?
Right.
And, you know, for me, I think maybe I'm slightly more someone who leans towards, do I believe this player can have an NBA career rather than let's just take a big swing on this guy and see if it hits. And I think all three of those guys, you know, maybe don't necessarily have the highest ceilings of someone who might be available in the second round, but I'm pretty comfortable with all of those guys at least being able to be like a 10th man on the Kings roster. And ultimately, again, given the success rate of picks in the mid second round, if you get someone who's just on the team and providing value for a few years, that's a huge win.
Nick, we really appreciate you taking some time to provide some insight, man.
Yeah.
It's been really fun to pick your brain about this. I feel like I got a little smarter about the draft tonight. Now I want to dive in and watch some more.
Yeah. All the names that you mentioned at the sleepers.
Yeah. Yeah. what's the best way for people to find your work?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter. I will never cloud X. You can find me on Twitter at NBA Johnson, and you can find No Ceilings NBA on Twitter at No Ceilings NBA. You mentioned the YouTube earlier. That's No Ceilings TV. And Also, this past season, I've been doing the Kings Weekly podcast with Ray LeBeau from Basketball Intelligence. Oh. Morgan appeared on the show earlier this year.
Oh my God, yes. Wait, that is so... Okay, this is so great. And by the way, I love Ray so much, so, so much. I'm so glad that you guys are doing
that. Is it because
you're
friends with his daughter?
No. Well, partially, but also Ray's amazing.
Yes,
so.
He is.
And he told me to send his best to both of you, so his best to both of you.
Hell yeah. Tell him we said hi for sure. Well, Nick, seriously, thank you so much for taking some time. We'll have you on again, maybe post-draft to get your thoughts on what the Kings did.
Oh, absolutely. Would love to be back on again. First time, long time. Hopefully next time I can be second time, long time.
Hell yeah. The one and only Nick Agar Johnson.
Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo, Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
You sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.